This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're spending this hour listening back to some of our favorite recent author interviews. This next one is an interview with a writer about one of America's most famous writers, E.B. White.
We all know the story of Wilbur, Charlotte, and her wonderful eponymous web. But what was E.B. White's inspiration for the story of a spider and a pig? Turns out it was his time he spent on a farm in Maine, where, in White's own words, this boy felt for animals a kinship he never felt for people.
Michael Sims writes about White's life in Maine in his new book, The Story of Charlotte's Web, E.B. White's Eccentric Life in Nature and the Birth of an American Classic.
We spoke to Sims about his book earlier this summer, and as Sims writes, the birth of that timeless children's story dates back to when White, also known as Andy, had his first significant encounter with a barn spider in Maine.
The spider lived on the underside of the barn's roof. Sheltered from the elements by an overhang, her web was an elegant orb whose loops and strands glittered on dewy mornings like an antique necklace. Every night she made the rounds of her miniature cosmos, tightly wrapping prey, cutting loose and jettisoning debris, reweaving broken strands. That busy autumn of 1948, as Andy went in and out of the shed during the endless daily routine of farm chores, he kept an admiring eye on the work of the tiny creature who lived her equally conscientious life above his head. He had been observing her for several days, watching the dew glitter in the mornings and the web almost disappear as the moisture evaporated by midday, glimpsing the spider herself as she emerged in the twilight to begin the night shift. In the evening, he stood below her web and peered up at it, watching his gumdrop-sized neighbor scurry toward prey, or hang upside down in the center of the web, patiently waiting.
And Michael Sims, the fascination, it doesn't end there. What happened next?
He discovers one night that she is creating something in the web. He realizes it's an egg sac, a round, lightweight object. And he watches her lay eggs in it, and then he doesn't see her again. And so several days later, he winds up thinking, well, I've got to see how this story turns out. And he climbs up and cuts the egg sac down with a razor blade in the exact way that Templeton will do this in the book later. And he takes it with him, puts it in his pocket, and takes it off to his apartment in New York, punches some holes in a little cardboard box, and throws it on the bureau in his apartment in New York.
So you write about what happens inside that little cardboard box. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, I can just read that paragraph.
Sure.
One day, several weeks later, he noticed on the bureau a movement so slight it might have been imaginary. He bent down and peered more closely at the box. Tiny spiderlings, so small they were barely visible, were climbing up through the air holes he had punched in the lid. Delighted with this renewal of life so many weeks after the mother's apparent death, Andy stood at the bureau and watched the latest generation of spiders. Even newly hatched, they seemed as busy as a Lilliputian construction crew. Bustling across his daily artifacts, they strung almost invisible web lines from nail scissors to hairbrush, from mirror to comb. After the spiders left the bureau, they continued to scurry around in Andy's imagination.
Oh, this is so fascinating to me because this is essentially, I mean, this is how Charlotte's Web ends, the actual book. I mean, Charlotte's little babies, Wilbur watches them fly off into the breeze.
Yes, it's wonderful. It was really a fascinating project for me. There must have been 12 times when the hair stood up on the back of my nerdy little neck as I got into this wonderful story and found these bits and pieces scattered through his papers and his published letters and essays, a little piece here, a little piece there.
And you talk about how from an early age, E.B. White struggles with anxiety. But he finds peace from that anxiety during summers with his family taking vacations in Maine, even writing to a friend saying it's one of the most beautiful states in the Union. So can you tell us a little bit more about E.B. White's connection with Maine, since we think of him so much as a New York fixture?
I think that's one of the most beautiful parts of the story for me is the way that, as a child, he discovered domestic animals, really, in the stable in Mount Vernon, New York. And then he developed just a passionate love of nature outdoors because his family went for the entire month of August every summer went to the Belgrade Lakes region in Maine. And he writes beautifully about that in such essays as Once More to the Lake. And that kind of excitement and peaceful response to the world helped shape his whole life. He was a shy and timid child. As he said, he was never abused, but he was always anxious. So nature allowed him to totally disappear into the world as himself and not feel, I think, judged in any way. And then when he moved to the coast of Maine as an adult, he bought a 200-year-old farm, and they wound up in the barn there discovering and reconnecting with these simmering, beautiful, potent memories from childhood.
Well, and you write about this in the book where you say that E.B. White or Andy was, you know, really he became too experienced of a farmer to allow his, you know, quote, pastoral ode to get by on merely golden nostalgia, as you say.
Yes, and that becomes a very important thing, maybe the earliest inspiration for Charlotte's Web, emotionally at least, is he begins to have major doubts about the role of the farmer, the morality of farming, that every spring he would be tenderly nursing a piglet only to feed it conscientiously every day and then suddenly in September go, surprise, I'm going to kill you. And he naturally felt that was rather hypocritical. And he tried to save a pig that became very sick, and he knew how weird it was that he was working really hard to save this pig's life. And it died, and he said his sympathy was not about food in the future. It was about the pig was a suffering creature in a suffering world.
Well, Michael Sims, you reveal so much about the life of E.B. White that I just had no idea about, particularly what happened at the end of his life. E.B. White passed away in 1985. His wife, Catherine, had died before him. But when E.B. White was nearing the end of his life, he was suffering from Alzheimer's. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, for just about a year or so right before he died.
So not too long. But during that time, his son, Joe, was managing his care and looking after him. And this is what just, I don't know, it just makes my heart stop. Because you write that Joe found that reading aloud soothed his father, soothed E.B. White. So he started by reading E.B. White's own work to him. What did White say about that?
Joe White would later tell this story, and Roger Angel has recounted it elsewhere too, that after a while, E.B. White would listen. He would motion yes or no to reading something. If he were more peaceful and able to concentrate longer, White would listen through to the end, and then he would stir and look at Joe and ask him who wrote what had just been read to him, which is an enormously poignant thing to think that you've lost the memory of all your own work. And Joe would look at him and say, "You did, Dad." And E.B. White would think about this for a moment and sort of turn it around in his mind, and finally sometimes he would murmur, "Not bad."
Michael Sims, thank you so much for telling us this story and actually rekindling my love, at least, for just a true American classic. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure to be here.
That's Michael Sims speaking to us earlier this summer about his new book, The Story of Charlotte's Web, E.B. White's Eccentric Life in Nature and the Birth of an American Classic. You can find an excerpt on our website, radioboston.org.